Hey, sexy investigators. I just gave you a good role play idea. Tons of free education here on the Sex Lab with Lara podcast. This episode coming up is with Jaya, who is a world-renowned sexologist and one of my teachers, and it was so awesome to sit with her. It's been a long time since I've spent time with her, and it was fun listening back to this episode just now, and I'm just feeling all warm and fuzzy in my heart for Jaya and all of my teachers, and just reflecting on how even, you know, teachers I haven't seen in a long time, like my yoga teacher, Shiva Ray, I haven't really studied with her for years in a really concentrated way, yet my teachings from her are so deeply integrated into my being. And I feel the same way about Jaya and a lot of my teachers, because I'm a nerd and I love geeking out and I love knowledge and I love learning. So when it's something that's important to me, I really try to get it. I try to get it into my mind and even more importantly into my body, so it's something that I can live and breathe. And you'll see that Jaya is similar in the sense that she is also an explorer and a total geek. And this episode is chock full of fascinating insights into our sexuality. And I just want to tell you about a couple cool opportunities because I have a feeling you're going to be all inspired to go deeper into your own sexuality after you listen to this podcast. In fact, I know you will be. So one, I have an event coming up January 24th. It's a touch play shop for lovers that I'm co-teaching with my friend Bannigan McDade here in Venice. And we've taught a few of these in the last several months. And it's going to be the last one for a while because we're going deep into our own projects for a few months. So if you've been wanting to take this class, this is the last time it's going to be offered in this really small, intimate environment and at this price point. So in the future, it'll be larger scale all around. So again, January 24th, Touch Play Shop for Lovers. Go to laracatone.com for more on that. My friend Destin Garrick, formerly known as the Erotic Rockstar, is doing an event this weekend in LA. And it's a full weekend event called Evolve LA. And a lot of the stuff that we talk about in this podcast with Jaya is being addressed in this event with Destin, kind of reprogramming these stories we have around how we have to behave sexually as men, as women, and the places that we think we're at odds. And this is about really coming together and being more fully expressed. And I have a discount code. I'm going to be there Friday and Saturday all day and all night. And it would be fun to see you. Say hi if you're there. You can get 50% off any of the levels of entry with the code Lara, L-A-R-A, my name. So if you go to sign up on the Eventbrite page, it's not immediately obvious, but there's a place to put a discount code. So you'd put that and then you get 50% off. So go to Evolve Live LA and check that out. And then finally, Your Path to Passion is Jaya's event in April, and I will also be there and looking forward to that. And it's yourpathtopassion.com, and there's a scholarship opportunity. Okay, without further ado, here is some insights into superhero sex mastery with Jaya. That sounds good. Because except for the chair squeaking. Yay. So I kind of saved this till we're recording, but this is really special for me to have you here.
Yeah,
because you are such an impetus on this path for me. And I have to give you credit, I think, for the title of this podcast, which is Sex Lab with Laura, because I'm pretty sure you're the first person that ever taught me about Sex Lab, and I've loved the concept. And and it just kind of, you know, I like alliterations.
Someone actually emailed me and they were like, "What's this? Sex Lab? Was she your student?" My community.
Yep.
Yeah.
Indeed. So now it's officially out there. I'm crediting you where credit is due.
The Sex Lab. Everyone now is wondering, what's a sex lab?
Yeah. What is a sex lab?
Well, sex labs were born out of my partner and I after I had my son and I was a new freaked out mom. Having a time where we were truly exploring sexuality, and it wasn't about like we have to have sex, but it started off being called intimacy time. And then it got more geeky as time went along, where first I started off with my own sex labs. And I'm a super crazy, you know, Reid Mahalko talks about the sex geeks, like I'm way geeky. So I actually, my sex lab has five components. So it starts with a hypothesis. Like my hypothesis would be something like when I first started and I was self-exploring, what would happen if I just explored vaginal orgasms for a week and didn't touch my clitoris? You know, hypothesis is that one, that will drive me crazy. And two, I may have a deeper understanding of my vaginal orgasms. Then I set up, okay, well, what's the duration of the lab? I'm going to do a whole week, an hour to 2 hours a day of exploring my vagina. And then what's the actual experiment? What's the checklist that I need to fulfill the experiments? The experiment would be, okay, every day I'm going to do a different experiment on exploring my vagina with toys, with hands, with, you know, hot spots, all that kind of fun stuff. And then what I'm looking for in that might be like answering certain questions on my checklist or, you know, what are the tools that I need? And then the last piece of the sex lab is the follow-up, meaning, okay, well, what did I learn from this experiment? What did I gain? What do I want to do more of? What do I want to never do again? And so then that way I've created this experiment on myself using my body. And then those sort of graduated into challenges, which was my first 101 days of self-pleasure, moving into 90 days of oral sex with my partner, moving into 40 days of submission and 40 days of dominance, inspired by my new book. And then I did 90 days of sex and money. This past year, we did oming, orgasmic meditation. We did seduction. And right now I'm in one which is about initiation and slow dancing.
Wow.
So fun. So we're constantly doing these little crazy experiments and challenges. And within that is a sex lab so that we're learning something. Mm-hmm. But it's a different, I think the big clear thing is that it's a different time than I'm having sex versus I'm learning sex.
Yeah. 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 And, you know, not everyone, well, because it reminds me of like tantric practice, mm-hmm. as you're saying, like you're basically doing a practice of sort, or what I would call a practice in my life, because I would rebel if I called it a challenge. But you know, setting a set thing that you're doing over a set amount of time, and, you know, other people might just have a sex lab, you know, that's just a specifically contained thing that doesn't have to be 40 days or 30 days or even a week. You know, it can be just another form of date night, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, and that's a whole other topic, but adventure dating has been a big thing we've started incorporating, which has been really fun. I have one tonight, actually.
I have to ask about adventure dating.
Okay, so adventure dating has three elements. It's mystery, obstacle, and naughtiness or novelty. What happens is, this is on my big project right now, which I'm really studying. Why are we losing passion in relationships? Like, what is going on that one in three relationships in America, long-term relationships, is sexless. What is going on that 60% of us end up in divorce, or 60 to 70% of us are having affairs? What's up? Like, why are we not desiring our partners? What's going on? And one of the things I found in my research was that when people are dating, it's like they go out to a movie, they don't really talk, or they go to the same restaurant every, you know, for 40 years. I had one couple, 40 years, same restaurant every Thursday night. You know, it's like, okay, well, that's kind of boring. So we got to spice things up. And when you look at a relationship when it's first there, it has mystery, it has obstacle, and it has a little essence of breaking rules or taboo. And it has a novelty all over it. It's all new. And if we look at all of our great romances, the Twilight films, Romeo and Juliet, you know, like I like Twilight. I have a little crush on the guy who plays Edward. So I dream about him. Anyway, lots of, I actually just had a dream about him a couple of nights ago that he came to me to be my client. And anyway, I'm blushing in the studio. But, you know, he's a vampire. And of course, that's mysterious all on its own. But that creates also the obstacle of at any moment he can bite her and she becomes a vampire. He sucks her blood and kills her. You know, the other vampires around her are going to, there's all this obstacle, mystery. And yet she's mysterious to him because she's the only person whose mind he can't read. So there's this mystery obstacle going on. 50 Shades of Grey, you know, the movie coming out, all that kind of stuff. We've got the same setup, lots of mystery and obstacle, two different worlds, people coming from two different worlds. So how do, the question I came up with was, how do we cultivate those elements, what I call the passion trifecta, mystery, obstacle, novelty, naughtiness, and hold that? Because that's one of the things that's creating that really deep, hot, passionate attraction. And Ian and I started doing, my partner's name is Ian, and we started doing a just crazy adventure date experiment where every Thursday night, pretty much, we go on some kind of crazy adventure date that has those three elements. So for example, tonight I've set up this thing and I just did this. It doesn't have to take tons of planning, but you can do epic ones too. I've done some epic ones, but the one tonight is called a treasure hunt. And so I emailed him and I said, lover, be prepared for a treasure hunt tonight. Be ready at 5:30, wear comfy clothes and walking shoes. You will be instructed to find the following items. Here are clues. One, she's mysterious with long hair, .. Two, hot, red, empowering. Three, blue, comfy, .. Four, cool and will boost your libido. So I'm actually giving him cards and he has to figure out the clues to each piece of the treasure hunt. I'm one. Hopefully he's not listening. the first one, she's mysterious and has long hair. I'm going to hide somewhere and he has to come find me. You know,
I love
it's
that.
A shopping excursion. We're actually going to the mall, which could be a boring place. Like I would never go to the mall, but I was like, well, okay, it's a different place. We don't go. We both hate the mall, but I'm doing this whole crazy adventure around the mall where like he has a budget. He's going to have $600. That's a high budget for a date. This is part of my clothing budget. And he's going to go and find me a hot red dress.
Cool.
And shoes. And like, so there's a whole crazy treasure hunt we're doing in the mall for our adventure day tonight. We've done much hotter ones, but you know, that's part of it is that every Thursday we have these crazy and neither one of us know what's going to happen. So he has no idea.
So do you take turns planning?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Last one he did for under $20. They don't have to be crazy expensive. He did one where he took me to a sculpture garden here in Los Angeles, which was free. And he picked Rumi poem lines and Hafiz lines and would take me to a sculpture, which he had plotted out, and read me lines from these different poets. And then afterwards, we went to a Chinese tea house and had a Chinese tea ceremony.
Amazing.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Making you get creative with your dates. Yeah. Adventure dating. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been really fun. I'll tell you maybe about the New York epic, the really epic one in a bit.
Okay. So we just dove right in, which yep. I'm not surprised about, but I want to back up and just kind of have you talk about who you are and your work in the world.
Mm-hmm. So my work in the world, because I do like to differentiate between who I am and the work that I do. But I would say that my main crux of the work that I do is helping couples to have both deep connection and unbridled passion. Not that I don't work with single people as well, but really my love is working to help people have passion, because it seems like this dying thing. Like, we may be having sex, but we don't have like awesome sex. Mm-hmm. We don't have fun and frequency and fulfillment in our sexual lives. So I'm really about getting satisfaction, but also lots and lots of passion within that. And then for single men that I work with, it's really about superhero sex mastery. So I'm really interested in taking men to just like, I'm a superhero. Like, I can look at her and burn orgasm into her body, you know, kind of type stuff. So those, I would say, were my big passions. But overarching all of that is shifting the view of sexuality in our culture from something that is this bad, wrong, taboo thing to something that's cultivated, celebrated, and that we have a community and a conversation about. So, you know, that's why I do these podcasts and things like that, is because I want to get the conversation going. And we know there's a lack of sexuality education in this world that is just huge. And I wouldn't say it's a lack of sexuality education. Mm. We are constantly being educated about sex. Porn, mm-hmm. advertising, parents, religion, whatever, is educating about sex. It's just a bad education.
Yeah. And even the lack of discussion about things is providing its own sort of education.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The silence is an education. Mm-hmm. You know, don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's rough. You know, I ask audiences all over the world. I was in front of 1,500 people recently, and I said, okay, who here had a great sex education? Crickets. There were like a couple of people raised their hands, and wow, you know, that's telling.
Mm-hmm. And so, okay, so then who are you?
I am an experimenter. You know, I would say if I could describe myself, it would be, there's so much depth to who I am. And I'm always looking at that. Like, I'm constantly changing. I think we always are. But I think I'm a grand experimenter. Like, you know, okay, what does this do? How do I play this body? How do I experience ecstasy every day? I'm constantly asking myself the big, big questions about that. And, you know, I like to create a lot of mystery and seduction and, you know, in that. And so it's a constant, like, who am I? It's more, who do I want to be? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I'm striving to be the best human I can possibly be. And I'm really into hacking things lately and, you know, biohacking and just all that. Like, just what can we do with this human instrument? It's so amazing. So I'm asking my question, but the question is more not who am I, but who is it that I'm being? Mm-hmm. And so who am I being? Generous, honest, authentic. That's really, really important to me. I would say are some of the words. I was playing last year with my sex and money challenge on opulent being one of my words. I liked that word.
Yeah, it's a good word. How did that show up with sex and money?
Well, I did a 90-day sex and money challenge, which was an exploration on how would orgasm affect my ability to make more money. And being in an orgasmic state and a constant affect my income. There was a Huffington Post article about this, and it's something I've heard many times. If you've read Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, chapter 11 is all about sex transmutation and how we use sexuality to awaken latent genius in the brain. And that gives us more creativity, which then allows us to increase our value in the world. It's part of the theory. So my goal was to have an orgasm every day for the 90 days and to hold the intention around the orgasm that I was increasing my financial abundance in the world. Financial freedom really was what I was holding on to. And this idea, because I have no shame around sex. Well, I can't say no shame. There are still things that come up every now and then that bite me. But I have tons of shame around money. Mm-hmm. And so this was a huge thing to apply, which is all the things I've applied around sexuality and the shame around sexuality into the shame I had about money, which was, if I have it, then I'm ashamed because I have more than someone else. if I don't have it, then I'm ashamed because I'm not successful.
Yeah.
I haven't won the American game or whatever else would come up around there. And then my judgment on people who had money was, again, a judgment that I'm holding within myself, which was about rich people are destroying the environment and rich people are blah, 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 you know, like mean. And I just had all these stuff. And so if I could transform money from, like, I had sexuality, so mm-hmm. I'm applying the same principles to being my lover, how does that shift everything? Mm-hmm. And by the, I don't know, maybe like 70th day or something like that, I had tripled my income.
Wow.
So it was pretty, and I've maintained that. Like, I had my best year ever in 2014, and it started because of those 90 days. And I mean, I'm completely convinced that being in a high orgasmic pleasure radiance, my feminine radiance state, and healing the shame and the pain that I had around money was, I mean, I paid off all my debt.
Wow.
I mean, and I had like $70,000. I mean, it was like, talk about shame, like yeah. living in that much debt. And I mean, it was a mess. So to go like, well, completely like 180, I'm getting excited about this and hitting the microphone. You know, more than 180, it was like 360
yeah.
in my relationship with money. And now it's just like pouring in.
That's so inspiring. Yeah. Yeah.
It was a huge change.
Yeah.
And one of the harder challenges I did.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I actually had a money muse. She came to my door one day, knocked on my door, and I opened up the door and she's in a fur coat. Okay, talk about, I'm like a vegan vegetarian, right? Like, no harm to animals person. And she's like in a fur coat, pearls and lingerie underneath it with her hot heels on. And the theme was opulence for the evening. And she's like serving me food and put pearls on me. And it was just like, it was crazy because it was naughty because I'm like, would never wear fur and, you know, like uh-huh. all this really interesting stuff. And, you know, we just did fun. It's always fun experiments.
Yeah.
Business meetings in that kind of attire, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
So fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it sounds like, you know, you weren't always completely comfortable in your sexuality or, you know, someone that could talk about it in this, mm-hmm. you know, nearly shameless way of being in the world around sex. So what was, you know, your journey to get here?
Yeah, we all have our inciting event. So I love people to just kind of like look at what was your first shame. Like Sheila Kelly, founder of S Factor, talks about first offense.
Uh-huh.
Like, what was your first offense against your body, against your sexuality? Mine, you know, the very big one that I can remember was with my grandmother. And I was across the street with a boy in the bushes, you know, fooling around doing my thing. I talk about this in my oral sex book, and she called me and I was across the street, which I thought was just like the bad thing I had done was crossing the street without an adult. And I hid under the bed and she got me out and said, you know, what did you do? And I told her what, oh, I was just in the boy bushes with the boy, like having him do these things. And she beat me.
Oh, wow.
After I told her. And so I got the message like that was pleasurable, but it was wrong. And therefore I'm wrong and I'm bad. And that was a big event. And so it's been, you know, many years of unraveling the shame. So looking at, okay, well, what's the root of the shame? What's the root cause? And mine was happened to be around oral sex. And that happened to be what I was doing with the boy in the bushes at like 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. We all have our little experimentations.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was the name of biology I was researching. so how I knew, you know, what to do, I don't know. But topic for another day. So this idea of looking back at the root and then what is the belief I created out of that? I'm bad or wrong because I enjoyed it. How do I behave as a result? I kind of freak out when someone goes down on me feeling bad and wrong, you know? So then how does that manifest in my life? And so we look at how these things manifest. And when I'm working with people specifically around the shame, it's like, okay, well, what is the belief and is it yours? Mm-hmm. Does it actually belong to you? Well, no, that was my grandmother's belief. It had nothing to do with me. My belief was I was in my ecstasy, like having fun with the boy in the bushes. Like I didn't know anything was wrong or bad. I was a kid, you know, there was nothing wrong or bad about my body or my pleasure or anything at that point. So I think we all have to look at what are those roots that are creating a belief? Is it your belief? And then how have you behaved as a result of that? And is that serving you in your relationship currently? Mm-hmm. You know, I work with Mormons, and I work with, I have a couple from Saudi Arabia right now. I have a Jehovah's Witness couple. I mean,
wow.
I have a melting pot of people. And one of the things that I see frequently is that this deep, deep shame is taught to them, you know, but then they get married and that deep shame is still in them, even though within their religious belief, and I honor all, you know, whatever, whoever's coming to me, whatever belief they have, says, you know, hey, once you're married, go for it.
Yeah.
But then they've been shame like all their whole life. So even though the belief system has changed, the behavior has not, because the rooted belief is still there. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And so then as a married couple, they're both kind of living in that shame place still, and they're definitely not going for it.
They're not going for it. They're not talking about it. They're not talking about what they want. They're not talking about what they desire. Mm-hmm. And they don't have any skill sets.
Yeah.
Whatsoever.
They probably don't even know what they want.
Right.
Or it's how like, to find it.
You know, what, I lay there and do it and it doesn't feel good. And that's all I know.
Yeah.
Why would I ever want to do that again?
So I'm curious, you know, I was blessed to do an apprenticeship with you, I think like back in 2011.
Yeah.
And I got to sit in on session work and, you know, I learned so much. And, you know, I love crediting my teachers, and I think that's the most I've learned out of like the past, you know, however 4 or 5 years that I've been doing this, is that like intensive time with you. So I just wanted to honor that while you're here.
You.
And, but I'm curious what your practice looks like now, because mm-hmm. there's been times where you've been busy writing or creating other projects, and it sounds like things have shifted. So what does that look like now?
Right now, it's kind of tough to work with me these days. I have a huge demand. Like, it's bigger than it's ever been. It's insane. Again, I think it has something to do with all those orgasms during that 90-day thing. But people now have to go on a journey with me. If they want to work with me, it is a commitment. It's a journey. And really, my big crux and foundation of my work are these 5 blueprints that I've discovered after all the time having my hands on people's body. That's something I didn't talk about my work, but it's hands-on. So I'm doing a lot of hands-on, hands-in kind of work with the license in the state of California as a somatic sexologist. And so what that means is, like, over the, I don't know, I've been doing this for a really long time. Probably since I was 18, I've been working in sexuality with the body. Mm-hmm. And, you know, before it was that as a tantra teacher, and I was an exotic dancer for a while, and, you know, it's my shady past. and then moved into the sexological body work. And I'd say, you know, I probably worked with like 2,000 people and bodies. And I started noticing patterns. And the patterns were the pathways to the arousal. And we live in a culture that has one certain way that they tell us to be sexually. However, there are 4 other blueprints that it's not even taking into account. And so what the crux of my work now is helping people uncover, speak, feed, heal, and really work very deeply with the blueprints, as well as giving them a plan and a practice and a map to creating passion, because that is, you know, what's not happening. So I'm doing events. Mm-hmm. As well as working with only VIP, very, you know, my very important VIP clients, who do one-on-one work with me. Other than that, they're going through a program. It is now a program, that promises more sex, more desire, and total sexual fulfillment for the couples, and hot, steamy, super hero sex mastery for the men. Yeah.
Fantastic. And, yeah, can you tell me more about the 5 blueprints? Because I feel like I just got a little taste of that.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure I totally followed that. So I want to back up and talk more about, like, what are the 5 blueprints and how do you work with them?
Sure. So the 5 blueprints, again, it came from having my hands on lots of people's bodies and seeing what is their pathway to arousal. The first one is energetic. And the energetics are turned on completely by anticipation. They're a little bit more in the Zen flavor, and that they're aroused by not touching, and they're aroused by space, and they're aroused by tease, and they're aroused by the takeaway, as opposed to going straight for their genitals. If you go straight for an energetic's genitals, they short circuit, turn off, shut off. And that's because they're so sensitive. They literally, like, you're touching them way before you're touching them. You can look them in the eye and give them orgasms. They're highly sexual. It's just, they're usually the most shut down, and their shadow is hierarchy. They can get, you know, those of them who know that they're energetic, they can get a little like, oh, well, that's so base, you know, like sexual genitals and blah, 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 you know. They often have some abuse history. And so I'm an energetic. I'm a core energetic. Yeah, you know, you can look at me right the right way, and the wind blows the right way, and I'm having orgasms. You know, a lot of people who are in the more conscious movement, conscious sexuality, you're going to find a lot more energetics within that movement. Then we have the sensuals, and the sensuals are aroused mostly by all of their senses being ignited. They're body creatures, whereas an energetic is more of like feeling the energy. A sensual is a body creature, that they're more inside their body. They're more like full-handed, long, slow strokes on the body, sensual touch, smells. They need the room to be the right way. They want the candles, and they bring beauty to the sexual experience and depth to the sexual experience. Their shadow stuck in their head, can't get out of their head, thinking about their bills, thinking about what their partner's not doing right. They can be very judgmental. You know, the room's not right, the room's not clean. Perfect example, I had a couple, she was super sexually wired. I haven't got to the sexual one yet, but she's on the bed naked, like, hey, she's super hot too, like, you know, supermodel quality hot. She's on the bed naked, and her husband walks in, and, you know, she's like, what is the matter with him? Like, why won't he just fuck me? Like, what is going on? And he is worried about the socks on the floor. That's a perfect sensual shadow with a sexual who's like dying. Like, please have sex with me. And he wants to clean, he wants to do the laundry. And that is because the socks on the floor are distracting, and it's all he can think about during sex is the bed's not made and the socks on the floor. And then that leads to the laundry isn't done, which leads to then the kids, which then totally shuts down the sexuality. So the sensual gets stuck very much in their heads. There's a bunch of other shadows, and this is a much deeper system. I'm giving you the cliff notes here. The sexuals are nudity, genitals. They're turned on by sex. Like, it's fun. It's, you know, for the most of them, they don't have a whole lot of hang up shame. It's just like, okay, I put my penis in your vagina and we have orgasms. What's wrong? Like, that's what you do, you know? So the sexual is very fun. It's simple. If it were a language, I say this is American English, whereas the energetic is Chinese and the sensual is like a fine Castilian, you know? Yeah. So you've got this, like, it's kind of like, I don't know if you've ever heard of the love languages, Gary Chapman's work. This is like the sex languages, you know, this is thinking of it in that way. And then we've got, the sexual shadow, which is pathway is like, you know, that pathway, like for a sexual, I was talking about the sexual woman earlier. It's like, I'm naked. You should be turned on. You should have an erection. What's wrong with you? Because that's not his pathway to arousal, but it's hers. So she's saying, hey, I'm naked. That means you should have an erection. So there's this limited definition of sexuality, and it becomes, you know, we do this and then we have an orgasm and we're good. What's wrong? There's nothing more. So there's the simplicity sometimes gets a little bit in the way. And they sometimes don't have a regard for any of the other blueprints. It's very hard for them to understand what there's Spanish and, you know, it's a little American. No slam on the American. Sorry, guys. So, you know, why would I want to learn anything else? This is great here. So then the kinky blueprint is taboo. Anything that is about taboo. Now, I don't want to confuse this with BDSM. BDSM is a whole world in itself, and a lot of the people who have kinky wiring practice BDSM.
Yeah.
However, kinky wiring, what I'm seeing right now is a starvation for polarity, which is a starvation for masculine, feminine, light and dark, and surrendered or in control. And we've had a big polarity flip around in our society right now. And because of that, I think that a lot of the kinkies are coming. There's a lot more kinky showing up on my table recently. And so with the kinky, it's, you know, it could be I had sex out of missionary position and that was my whole thing that was taboo. Or it could be I want to be tied up, or it could be I want to be spanked, or it could be I want to wear a blindfold. It could be, I want to just absolutely surrender and let go and go into what people call subspace and just go into altered state of consciousness. So their taboo is usually very powerful and something that is taboo to them, not taboo to the world, but it's their personal taboo. And the shadow side of the kinky is shame, really deep shame. Now, any of the blueprints can have shame, but the shame here is so intense. Like, perfect example, my partner Ian. Mm. So I wrote the book Cuff Tied Satisfied, the new one. My publisher gave me the assignment to do 40 days of submission and 40 days of dominance so that I could write a book about kink.
That's not a bad assignment. From your publisher.
It was fun. And so I had a budget and, you know, it was fun.
Wow.
It was fun. But what I didn't know was that my own partner was kinky wired. And, you know, I mean, he had hinted at, like, you know, I kind of am interested in this kind of stuff. And we'd played around very lightly with it. But, you know, his shame was so deep that he was hiding it from me. Which is crazy. Like, I'm a sexologist. What I do for a living is talk to people all day long about sex. So What's up with that? And that's because this blueprint has deep shame, which is something must be inherently wrong with me because I want this thing that I am ashamed of. In his particular case, it was ropes, you know. And then it got deeper. You know, once we actually started exploring, there was one session in particular. I was the dominant and he was the submissive. And we were experimenting with what are his edges. And in the session, we did not find his edges, and I was the one crying by the end of the session. And I took on an archetype of a total ice queen. My ice queen was a mean, horrible bitch. And, you know, I mean, there was a point he's like on his knees and I'm just slapping his face and,
I'm
like, who are you? And he's like trying to come up with some answer. And, you know, I'd slap him out. Wrong, wrong, wrong. I mean, this went on for like 5 minutes. And then finally I just looked at him and I was like, you're nothing. And boy, that was, he had said humiliation was somewhat of an edge and caning was somewhat of an edge. And then we're doing, I mean, like, that's totally humiliating. Like, you're nothing. You're nothing. You're this little petty servant to me. I'm the queen and you're nothing. And, you know, he's like, that was hot.
Wow. You know?
And I'm like crying. I'm like, we need to cuddle. Yeah. You know? after that session. That was really a hard session. But yeah. You know, it's all an experiment. So let's see what happens. So that was a big thing, was an unraveling. How deep is his kink? How deeply wired is he into this? And it is very deep. And he has no history of abuse, you know, before people start judging, because I know about 20 people just like freaked out, probably more than that. You know, that there's no history of anything there that would even hint to, you know, like, oh, there's some kind of psychological damage as to why he would want this. You know, the whole first chapter of the book is why. Why is my partner this way? You know, because kink was my final frontier, because it was like I judged it for many years. I was like, what is wrong with those people that they want to be hit or, you know, humiliated or any of those kinds of taboo things? And boy. here I have my partner on my hands and I'm looking at it, you know, my final frontier.
Wow.
Yeah. So back to the blueprints, there's one more, which is a shapeshifter. And a shapeshifter is all of the blueprints. And a lot of people want to claim they're safe shapeshifters and they're usually not. Shapeshifter is where we're aiming to be, of course, because then we can speak all languages and we have unlimited creativity. However, a true shapeshifter would be equal in all things. They're equally turned on by all of these things. And I would say I became a shapeshifter as time went on, mostly because of my work, because I'm forced kind of into shapeshifter land, but also because my partner's turn on in kink became my turn on. And only when I'm playing with him am I a true shapeshifter. If I'm playing with somebody else, it's like, the kink doesn't really do much for me. But with him, because I know, I mean, we spent all this time going very deeply into his particular kink, I know that that is such a high turn on for him that then it flips over into my becoming my turn on.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, I love all of this. I'm eating it up. It's so cool. Is it kind of like, is another way of describing it archetypes or not quite?
They can be archetypes. I mean, I definitely play within archetypes within them. So the book also chapter 4 talks about, EEPs, erotically empowered personas. And so what came out of my exploration of this is the erotically empowered persona. Who are you as an erotic being? Who do you want to become? You know, where are you going with this? And what I find is that everyone has one. So they live in our bodies, and the body doesn't lie. So a lot of the blueprints are coming out of the body. Like an example, I had this one couple I was working with, and she's like, I'm sensual. And then I get her on the table, and the energetic touch feels like spiders are crawling all over her. She can't stand it. She's like, get it off of me. The sensual touch is like, yeah, okay. You know, there's a couple little bit of a true sensual, like moans and writhes. And is like, you know, when you hit that button, and they always look at me and go, more. The kinky blueprint, when you slap them or scratch them or hit their blueprint in some way, it's this guttural, like, oh, that comes out of their body, and their body does this like contraction kind of like, and that's what I'm looking for, is like, what is the body telling me as I'm going through these blueprints? And because the body doesn't lie, that's, you know, that's a big piece of what I'm looking for as I'm not examining, but, you know, determining what someone's blueprint is. So the blueprint then helps us determine the archetype. Mm-hmm. So we look at, okay, what is your blueprint? If your blueprint is kinky, and then what are your aphrodisiac emotions? And oftentimes the aphrodisiac emotions are unexpected. And so we look at what comes up in the body. You know, is it anger? Is it sadness? Is it, we always think love is the emotion that is tied into our eroticism. I had a client on my table a couple months ago, and we did a session, and he went into ecstatic laughter. I mean, just laughter. And I said, wow, all this unexpressed joy.
Yeah.
There's just so much unexpressed joy in your eroticism. And so he started tapping into the joy that was in his eroticism. So his archetype is, I think he's an energetic joy. And so then we look at that, and then we look at the body, and we name the archetype. Okay, well, what in your body that you've shut down is the energetic joyful one? And then we give it a name, like, you know, Fred or Bob or Samuel or whatever, you know, and people come up with all kinds of different crazy, amazing names. So I had an icy queen. I had a wickedly kinky mistress. I have a gorgeous goddess. You know, I have these different archetypes, which then I played with, and they're in the book. There's pictures and everything. It's kind of fun of uncovering that.
And are all the five blueprints
in the book? The only one that's really not in there is the shapeshifter. But I talk about the blueprints within the book, and then, you know, the why of, like, why are we turned on by what we're turned on to, and sex labs are in there, and, you know, there's all kinds of fun stuff. Yeah.
That's so cool. And it's Cuff Tied and Satisfied. And where can people find your book?
Anywhere. Okay. Any bookstore, Amazon, and they're everywhere.
So, great.
Yeah. Should be all over the world. So wherever you have a bookstore near you, you can get them. You can also go to my website, MissJaya.com. I believe we have them on there too. Yeah. Or an event or something like that. Find me.
And you have an event coming up, mm-hmm. and you're doing some of this erotic blueprint stuff there, right?
Yeah. So I decided to create an event because not everybody can work with me one-on-one. And the really important thing is determining the blueprint, and then what's your partner's blueprint as well? Because if you're an energetic and you're with somebody who's sexual, that's a big difference. Mm-hmm. And can explain a lot of why you're not satisfied in your relationship. And so I wanted to create an event where people could come, workshop, find out their blueprint, learn about the blueprints in depth, and, you know, start getting on the path to passion. Really, I mean, that's the goal, is to get you more sex, more desire, and that sexual satisfaction from the event. So I created an event called Path to Passion, and I'm really excited about it. I'm doing a couple times a year. And last event we had over 100 people attend, which was really exciting. I had never had that in a, you know, I get like 13, 20 people, and people don't want to show up for sex events, but this just for some reason is, wow, really, really resonating with people really deeply. And so we go really deep into solving the problem of why are we not connecting passionately in that event. And so I'd like to offer all your listeners a scholarship. So if they want to come, they can go to yourpathtopassion.com to fill out an application to get a scholarship. The event is $997, but you can come for no charge.
That's so cool.
And it's in LA. The next one is April 18th, 19th, 2015.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That sounds fun. Yeah, I heard amazing things about the last one. Jaya doesn't do things half-assed. Jaya does it as we can see by her, you know, her challenges and her sex labs and yeah.
And for those of you who are brave and you come, you know, I work with you. You get on the stage and I'll show what your body wants. You know, and it's clothed and, you know, it's PG. We can do it totally PG. Yeah.
Cool. And so do you think that this is part of the reason that, you know, segueing back to why there's all these passionless relationships, why not even passionless, a lot of people aren't even having sex. Mm-hmm. And do you think, you know, what degree do you think this is playing a role that they're basically speaking different sexual languages. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's huge. I mean, from what I've seen and being a researcher in the field, hands-on, it's huge because there's this, you know, and then the new issues come up, which is like, okay, now we understand it, but I don't know how to speak Chinese. How do I learn how to be energetic when I'm a sexual? And God, this is boring. How do you feel anything? It's full of bullshit. You know, I hear that from a sexual sometimes, like, this is total bullshit. Like, how could you be feeling anything? There's nothing happening. So there is that. I would say it's kind of three keys. It's a communication piece. And communication harbors this, these blueprints. It also harbors, we're just not talking about sex. We're not talking about our desires. We're afraid to fully express ourselves. We're afraid to tell our partner, I can't talk about a show without anal sex. We can't tell our partner about our anal sex thing that we want, you know, like all of that, those elements of communication. And then the next piece is our loss of polarity, that there really is a huge loss between masculine and feminine and that scale and being conscious of it and light and dark. And in control and surrendered. It's so craved right now, is especially for the women are so craving the men to step into their masculine, dark, in control energy.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I wrote something on Facebook, like, I don't know, a couple of years ago. Sometimes a woman just wants to be taken. Mm-hmm. And the way that men respond, they're like, really? Uh-huh. And the women were like, hell yeah. Mm-hmm.
Men have been taught to be good boys.
Yep.
And to be our comfort security person, our father, mm-hmm. instead of our lovers. And we're at fault. I mean, the women are at fault. We have become the masculine in control people in the relationship. And we aren't giving room for the men. Pamela Madsen, I don't know if you know her,
yes.
her work, but Shameless is her book. She said something to me, and I actually did coaching with her for the book because I couldn't surrender. Imagine that. Day 32, it took a 40 until I finally surrendered to Ian.
Wow.
And part of it was I had to believe that he wasn't my abuser and he was actually my lover because uh-huh. I had abuse history. And then the other piece, you know, and she said this to me so well, was she said, you know, we ask the man to do a task, you know, like bring home the bread and the eggs. And then they bring home the bread and the eggs and they're like, yes, I did it. I killed the beast and slayed him and brought him home to the woman. Man did it. And he feels really good. And then we look at the bread and the eggs and we say, that's not gluten-free bread. You know, we eat gluten-free. What do you think buying that gluten-free bread? And then those eggs aren't free range. Those are like normal eggs. Like, what do you think buying? And now we've castrated him, cut off his balls. And then next we cut off his penis. And now he's completely emasculated. And why would he want to take us in bed? Because mm-hmm. we've just demolished his masculinity. So, you know, I think it's a two-way thing. I have so much compassion for men, but the men have been taught to be these good guys and they do not believe that we actually want to be ravished or taken or held down or, you know, called a sexy hot bitch or, you know, like whatever that is. They are trying to be good for us. And so we marry the safety comfort, or we marry the adventurous guy who then we turn into the safety comfort guy. And then we desire the adventure, wild, hot passion. And so, yes, we can have both, but we have to be very conscious of this polarity conversation.
Yeah. And I find that the other piece is, I think, you know, the bad men, you know, they get so much PR out in mm-hmm. the world and mm-hmm. it's such a small portion. And, you know, you could go even deeper and say, is anyone really bad? Like, what happened to them?
Right.
You know, but I find also that men are so afraid of being thought of as a bad man, an abusive man, you know,
that one of those guys.
Yeah, one of those guys, a creep.
Mm-hmm.
That they also shut themselves down in that way because they're taking on that shame that's so prevalent mm-hmm. out there, even though it's, again, a very small percentage. Right. Yeah.
And then I see the guy who doesn't want to come off as a creep, so he withholds all this stuff, and then it becomes neurotic, mm-hmm. and then he comes off as a creep.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I had a client who wouldn't look at a woman in the eyes because he felt like that was like being one of those asshole guys. Like, the face is this, he was like his pedestal. It's like, you know, this big thing. And so he would look down, and the way he was looking down was like this, you know, I'm looking at her breast.
Yeah.
So he would look at a woman's breast because to him that was safe. Like, he's looking at her heart.
Right.
And not her eyes. And so he's getting comments at work that he's a creep and like the women are uncomfortable with him. And here's this sweet, like, good boy guy who has no intention of insulting a woman. He wants to be the good guy. And all the women in the office think he's a weird creep and he hasn't had sex, you know, his whole life because he's, you know, been in this, like, I don't want to disrespect anybody.
Yeah.
And so we have to look at, like, well, how's that serving anything? Just keeping total disconnect and it's coming off strange.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And okay, I want to go a little bit more into polarity because I don't think we've talked about that much on any other podcast. I mean, we've alluded to like the masculine and feminine, but I love how you've kind of expanded the definition to include like lightness and darkness and I don't know.
In control and yeah, surrendered.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just talk, like, really define polarity for people?
Mm-hmm. So polarity, I don't like to get in the trap of, like, women are supposed to behave this way and men are supposed to behave that way. I think it gets too stereotypical. And then we are like, oh, well, you're not being masculine. Well, which is just emasculating him, ladies, by the way, as soon as you say something like that. So I want to be careful of what is that definition and making that definition yours, like masculinity. I often ask men, well, what does being masculine mean? And they start talking about aggro, the bad boy energy, you know, like,
yeah,
that is not what high masculine is. And so what does that look like? Well, the high masculine protects. The masculine creates container. The masculine is like an arrow, you know, target, shoot, light in the dark, that's mm-hmm. piercing the darkness. But the woman is the darkness. She is the emotion. She's the tidal wave. She's the swirl. She's the flow. She's like, where men are more arrow, the woman is more curve, you know, if I could say that. And I don't want to say this is women and men. Again, like, it's so hard to talk about masculine and feminine without talking about women and men. But I want to say feminine energy. Mm-hmm. The feminine is sensuality. It's flow. And it's not that men can't be feminine. What I want to say here is that we want to be conscious in the bedroom about what polarity we're living in so that we can consciously cultivate hot passion. So again, I don't like stereotypes and I don't like being like, oh, this is the way you have to be kind of a thing. It's more consciousness around where are you on the scale? If it were a scale, not black and white, but a scale. And then how can you increase that polarity? So, okay, if I want to like take my woman and ravish her and put on a little bit more masculine, then I'm going to take on the protector, the straight arrow, and allow her to bounce against that. Like, allow her to curve around it, allow her to break herself on it, to scream, to moan, to cry, to whatever wants to flow out so that she can just be in flow and you've got it all handled.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of the way I see it. Light and dark energy. Light is your angelic, good boy, good girl, do no wrong. A lot of energetics live in light energy as well. A few in the dark, myself, one of them. And then the dark energy is bad girl. Dark energy is break the rules, break the taboos, break the obstacles. You know, it's the she says, no, don't. And he says, you want it, you know, and I'm not talking rape here. I'm not talking like that is a different thing. I'm talking consensual play of the light energy that's all pure that says, no, don't force me. And the dark energy who comes in and takes, you know, that is, and this is fun play in the bedroom that is consensual. I want to make sure that I'm saying that yes, we have that dark and light out in the world as well. But this is the dark and light that's a safe dark and light that we're playing with consciously in the bedroom. And then the last piece is the in control and the surrendered. And the in control is I'm in control. I'm the one who's saying bend over. I'm the one who's, like tonight, I'm the one who's in control for my date night. He doesn't know what's going to happen. I'm going to give him cards and he has to go find this thing out. You know, like I may make even more in control roles. Like you can't ever look me in the eye all night tonight, or you can't speak unless I talk to you, or you are in control in the moment when you're picking out my clothing. And now you're the dominant one where I'm controlling from the control position, like topping from the bottom, as they say in the BDSM world. And then the surrendered is completely, you know, on the far end of the scale is completely just, you are in control and I'm just surrendered. You brought home the wrong bread and eggs. Thank you for bringing home the bread and eggs. Mm-hmm. There's no trying to control the situation. It's just, okay, yeah, he brought the home the wrong eggs. I'll have to go fix that later or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's I'm just going to eat the wrong bread and eggs because they're here, you know, and it's gratitude for. And so part of in the surrender, I still struggle with. I still struggle for what does the feminine surrender look like? And for me, it had to be like a 24/7 thing. I couldn't pop in and out of it. And so day 32, I finally learned what it really meant to surrender and just sit in the uncomfortability and sit in all the bratty stuff that was going through my head. Like, fuck you can't control me. Fuck you. I'm not going to use my safe word. You know, all that kind of stuff that was going on, and just go, okay, he's got me. Mm-hmm. He's got me, and he's my lover, and he's got my best interest, and I'm just going to let go. Mm-hmm. So that there's polarity.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you know, because myself included, I've been called a control freak, and I own that. And I, you know, I also have an abuse history, and I think there's something to honor there for sure. And I also long to surrender. Mm-hmm. And so do you have any advice for women who are in control in their lives and they feel good, they want to be in control to some degree, and they also want to surrender to a partner, a mm-hmm. lover?
One thing I would say is just, you know, there are three types of surrender the resistance, I would say, kind of. One is the brat, and I am definitely the brat, which is, while he's doing something, telling me to do something, I'm completely in my head going, fuck you, you don't know what you're doing. You call that flogging, you call yourself a master, blah, blah, blah. You know, like those are some of my thoughts that were going through my head. The second one is I won't do anything until you tell me to, kind of a way of surrender. And then the last one is actually being in service, which is I see your needs before your needs are there. Like, I'm going to get you the cup of coffee in the morning because I know you love the cup of coffee. Tony Robbins would call it living in a level three relationship, which is where you are doing everything to light your partner up and not because you want anything in return. Mm-hmm. It's truly just because you want to light them up. And that's what I would say is the pathway I had to find eventually. I had to go through those, the brat. And then once I finally started to surrender, it was, okay, I'm just not going to do anything until you tell me to. And then into the surrender of how can I light you up? How can I live at more of a level three, as Tony says, and your needs become my needs. Mm. And so, you know, coming from that love and then watching what your mind does and seeing if you can shift your mindset, because a lot of times that mindset is not serving the thing that we're so longing for. Mm-hmm. And one of my clients said the mantra I'm holding in my mind is what is right about this, because our mind will naturally go to what is wrong, what is he doing wrong, what is not good enough, da 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 da, instead of what is right, what is he doing right, and being in gratitude and holding him in a place where if he does something, you praise him. Like if you give him tasks, you know, give him a task, like take the garbage out, and when he does, oh my God, thank you so much for taking the garbage out, my man, and squeezes biceps, and you know, like, yeah, that is, you know, and it's a process. I mean, for me, it was like healing the abuse, trust. You know, I did a lot of therapy while I was going through my 40 days, mm-hmm. which was interesting because I've done a lot of different things throughout my life to heal the abuse past. But when I, and I hadn't had any issues with it until we did this project. Mm-hmm. And by day eight, I was a mess, total mess, everything coming back, flashbacks. I mean, like I was like, we have to quit this. So I went to a therapist who said, anybody else, I would tell them stop. However, you're Jaya.
So you're a sex superhero.
So here's what I'd say, you know, and so she really supported me. Kate Laurie, I don't know if you know
Yeah,
Kate.
She's awesome.
She really supported me, and I talk about her work and the work we did in the book to help me uncover what was happening, what was going on in this new layer, because I'd never hit a layer like this. And the moment that really scared me was we had done a particularly intense session, and I'd had this huge catharsis. I mean, just sobbing, snot everywhere. It was a mess. And I remember opening my eyes, and I was really deep in an altered state of consciousness. I opened my eyes and I looked out my eyes and I went, where am I? And it was someone else looking out of my eyes. It was a 7-year-old little girl looking out of my eyes. And it was the first time, I get chills all over talking about it, but she came back into my consciousness, which was like something happened. And I don't know exactly. It's like, well, something happened that she left. And it was literally like I opened my eyes and she's like, whoa, I'm looking out of, where am I? Who am I? Like, what is this? And it was like, whoa, there's the little Jessica is my real name. There's the little Jessica from when I was like a little teeny tiny girl.
Well, we do leave our bodies, you know,
in trauma.
Yeah. So that makes sense.
So it freaked me out. Yeah. I need a little help because something's going on here that's really intense. And who would have thought that kink would have been like this really deep healing experience?
Yeah. Well, often that which we resist has a lot of juice for us to explore. Yeah. Okay, I want to ask you one other question along these same lines, because I know this is one of your areas of expertise. Mm-hmm. Advice for men on how to take a woman, or how to get themselves to a place where they can take a woman.
Yeah, this is really deep work.
Yeah.
Because the men feel it's going against their high masculine, which is, I'm the protector, I don't harm. And to them, for some reason, it's interpreted as, if I'm holding a woman down, it's harm. If I'm, you know, taking a woman or being passionate with her too rough or anything like that, it's harm. And so first is to find if you can scan your body for your dark masculine in control, where does he live? Every man has it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the men tell me he's on a deserted island somewhere, or he's an animal looking at them. I mean, it's really interesting what the psyche does in order to come to find, like, where is this part of me? But the psyche has put that part somewhere. Kind of like we were just talking about me looking out of my eyes. It's like that part finally came back in my body. The men oftentimes have put and compartmentalized. Like one man I was working with recently, he had boxes in a desert. And all of it was locked in boxes in the desert. It's like, it's so fascinating to me. So we unlock the boxes. We invite in this piece and we give it a voice and we give it a name. You know, it's like, what's its name? Okay, it's Hunter. Okay, cool, Hunter. All right, I can already feel him. He's really hot and sexy. Where is he? Let's get him in your body. Okay, you feel him in your penis. Okay, now we're in a good place because now we've got it in the body. We've given it a name. What does it want? And this is always the most amazing part, because what it wants is this, like, so cool to hear the guy. And you can hear the little piece of the psyche that is fighting it. Uh-huh. So then, usually before they can say what they want, we go to the other aspect, the good boy, who is living on the surface. You know, who is that? And where did it come from? And what are the beliefs? Do they belong to you? What does it want? Okay, then once we've dispelled it or thrown it over a cliff or, you know, send it on a vacation, we sent that one away for a little bit, then we can talk to who that masculine is. And so we start talking and we have a conversation and we get what he wants. And it's always really intense. It's like, I just want to fuck her and I just want to, blah, 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 and I just want to, blah, blah, you know, like it's intense. And then we have to bring that one into their heart. Yeah. So it's a whole process, really, of like, because what I often find in the male body is there's a voice in the heart and there's a voice in their sex. Mm. And the two of them are at odds with one another. And how do we integrate them? So it's a lot of archetypal work. So that's like very philosophical. If I were just to give techniques, I would say find like bony handles, like big bones on the body to hold down. Don't be afraid to express your sexual desires. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's a big one. And it's all about her. Female sexuality is narcissistic. So we want it to be all about us. Like, mm-hmm. you're so hot, I can't take my eyes off of you. I have to have you now. I mean, just saying that alone is like, you don't have to hurt us. You don't have, but it's about the fact that you desire us so badly that you can't control yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it's about that you want us, you find us erotic. I was just reading this amazing book, The Alabaster Girl, by Zan Perion, who I had the opportunity to work with recently. And he says, to be a great lover as a man, you have to go through three stages. One is where you don't know crap and you're just like fuddling around and you're like asking her, does this feel good? And you know, like all those kinds of things. Level two is where you have some skills and you would be called a good lover. And it's all about her pleasure. It's all about like, okay, you know, this clitoral technique and like I'm turning her on and she's having orgasms. But the level three, and I agree with this so much. So when I read this, I was like jumping up and down and screaming. Because it's what I'm trying to get across to men to become the superhero sex masters. Level three is when it's about your pleasure, mm-hmm. but it's about your pleasure through her body. So you're getting off on her and that blows her mind. Mm-hmm. So, you know, first level, you're just worried about kind of like getting off yourself and hopefully maybe doing something that pleases her sometimes. And then second level is now it's all about her. And I have some skills, but third level is I'm getting off because of her.
Uh-huh.
So I love that.
That's amazing. How does one go from, I'm interested in like two to three,
uh-huh.
from having some skills to getting off, you know, what are the steps that someone would take to get there?
They have to find their pleasure.
Yeah.
So what has happened, and I see this so frequently, is that the guys are so worried about the woman's pleasure that they are no longer in their own pleasure. And so they're like, okay, I touch her clitoris like this. Here's the technique. And okay, good. She's making some sound. Okay. Oop, that's not working so well. Da, da, da. And they're so focused on what's happening in our bodies and the techniques and da, da, da. And then worried, especially if they're a sensual blueprint, then they're all like down the rabbit hole of it's not working or I'm not getting hard. Then the whole worry thing goes in. So the key is to transition the skills that you have and just forget them. It's like, you know, any kind of other skill set, you know, when you sit down to play the piano, you have to forget that you're playing chords and scales and all that kind of stuff and just be in the joy of the pleasure of your feeling of your fingers on the keys. So it's about, and one of the exercises that I have guys do is, when they're with their partners in between their legs, laying back against their chest. And I just have them start to move their hands over the woman's body and tell me where it feels most pleasurable. And it's such a telling exercise because the guys are like, okay, how are you doing? Are you okay? Like, is this turning you on? Like to the girls, it's like, no, that's two. We got to get into three, which is what are you feeling? What are you feeling in your hands? What about the curve of her body is exciting? What about, you know, what about her body is turning you on? Mm-hmm. So there's the question. Yeah.
Wow.
Yay.
That's awesome. Well, cool. I could talk to you about this stuff all day. Anything else that's like hot and present and that you want to share?
You know, I'm just super stoked about these blueprints and polarity and, you know, the other piece that I'd add in there is just I'm really excited about like herbs and different biochemical states and things that we can do to boost libido and looking at it as a whole picture because it's the psyche, it's the biochemistry, it's the energetics, it's, you know, it's what's happening physically. There's so many keys. And I know you've worked with Ellen Heat as well. And, you know, scar tissue. Sexuality is so simple. And at the same time, it's incredibly complex. But it's only because we've made it complex and we don't understand it and talk about it that it's complex. So,
and
it's another piece.
I was actually, the thought had floated out, but That reminds me, when you're talking before, I was thinking about, like, I love how you're talking so much about the mind and the programming of the mind and kind of undoing that and getting back into listening to the body. Because if we just talk about sex techniques and not work on, like, right, communicating about sex and listening to what we actually really want and the monkeys that are telling us crazy stories, then it's harder to grow and have more pleasure.
Right. Yeah. I've told some of my couples, like, guys, it doesn't matter what you do to her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can have the best tech, because the guys, again, arrow, they just want, like, how long, where, what do I do? And unfortunately, we're curves. So, you know, it's like, if her mind is going, he sucks. I'm not attracted to him. God, I should think about my yoga teacher, you know, because he's hot. He had his hands on my hips earlier today, you know. It's a losing battle. You've got to get in the right mindset and get present and get having the real conversations of, you know, hey, my blueprint is sensual. And that means that technique you're doing on my clitoris doesn't work for me because I need my whole body to be paid attention to. Or, hey, I'm a shapeshifter. And I'm not just a shapeshifter that needs, like, some variety. I'm a shapeshifter who needs all of this in one experience. So you got to start off energetic. And then from energetic, we go kinky. And then from kinky, we go sensual. And then from sensual, we go sexual, all in one evening. You know, then we're having a different conversation of needs. And that has to happen first, because I can teach. I used to just teach lots of technique. I was very much a hands-on technique person. And seeing these blueprints, I see, like, well, why isn't that working? Well, it's not working because we have to look at biochemistry and physical and emotional and energetic. And we have to look at blueprints, and we have to look at what stage of somebody's sexuality they're in. We have to look at a big whole picture, and then it's simple. Then it's just like, okay, you're sensual. Boom, here are all the techniques. Here's a huge list.
Mm-hmm. This is inspiring me and wanting to work with you again. Maybe I can get on that VIP list.
Come to my next event.
Yeah, I will, for sure. And the website for that is
yourpathtopassion.com.
Yourpathtopassion.com. Go there to get a scholarship.
Yeah, I only have about 100 scholarships, so okay. Make sure to check that out. I know we're somewhat sold out already, but, you know, I'm sure there's still some space.
And the book you can find anywhere. And
yeah, anywhere.
It's Cuff Tied and Satisfied. All right. Well, yay. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.